It's the 176th episode of Radio Free Nintendo, the final episode of RFN before 2010 begins. This is Greg, and with me is a reduced form cast of James Jones.
I am reduced.
And the host of Radio Trivia Podcast Edition, Michael TYP Cole.
Hello, I'm not Johnny, but I'll try.
Don't. please don't.
Oh, it's the accent's going to have to shape up for a start.
I don't have that 60s man draw.
Difficult. It's difficult to measure up to the Mets. I found out myself. So, yes, but this is the last show of the year. Obviously, the end of the year is a natural time to kind of look back on what's been going on in the past year. But I decided that we should actually look back a little farther than that. And we're going to take a look back at the whole Wii's existence so far, the past 3 years of the generation. I think it's a pretty significant turning point in a console's life for 3 years. Obviously, with the GameCubes, it was pretty much the point where its life went into death. Exactly. It was all over by then.
That is a turning point, in a way, yes.
They're quite decisive, I think. even the GBA was kind of on its way out 3 years in, because, of course, the DS was coming along, not to compete with it,
Third pillar.
Really? It wasn't only 3 years. That was longer than that, wasn't it?
It was the summer of 2001, and then by the holiday 2004.
But the GBA had such good times. That's so crazy.
It's hard to believe that we are, in fact, that far into the Wii's life, and yet certainly the end doesn't feel so close on the horizon.
A little bit this Christmas, but we know there's stuff out there.
Well, so we'll get into all of that later on in the show when we take a look back at just kind of, obviously we all know it's been a huge commercial success. There's not much to say about that, but how it's affected gamers, how it's affected us, and of course Nintendo fans generally, how has it lived up to our expectations. So that's all coming up in later on, but first we are going to start off with what should be a pretty brisk new business segment, and as is customary we will start with TYP as our guest. So let's catch up with what you've been playing since you last appeared on the show.
Sure. Well, I've actually been playing video games for starters. That's kind of new to me.
not Ludo.
Yeah, geez. I mean, so obviously I've been playing New Super Mario Bros. Wii. I don't know what you guys were talking about, taking your time completing it. Like I was done with it like a week after I wrote my review. So I've got 100%. And for those wondering about which levels are and are not worth unlocking if kind of time is valuable to you, my recommendations are the 4th, 5th, and 7th levels. Have you guys had a chance to unlock those yet?
Well, I've unlocked about half of them, but of those, I've only unlocked the 4th.
Yeah.
I'm down to a handful of star coins spread across about 4 worlds, so I'm very close.
I might lose my card to this podcast. I haven't even beaten the core game yet.
Oh.
I've been busy with other site-related activities.
Well, I mean, vis-a-vis the DS game, it was a lot easier to chip away at it when it's portable.
Yes,
I mean, there's no doubt about that.
I have to set aside time to play it versus, hey, I have a few minutes, let's play it.
Yeah.
But I have to say, I'm overall pretty disappointed with the special stage of this game. Those three that I called out are pretty crazy, but the other ones are, as Johnny kind of suggested, are not as special as one would hope, especially since they were kind of lazy on how they unlock them. I mean, it's just use your coins to unlock them versus like in Mario World where like, oh, I had to find a secret exit. And I guess you do have to find some secret exits to get all the star coins.
To get all the stars,
but
yeah.
It's not quite the same. It's not the same feel, you know?
Finding the special world, it was very much a case of finding it. I mean, it was an active process through the star roads that you found it, and so that was very special. This is very upfront. You complete the core game, and it's like there it is. That's something to shoot for, which I guess makes the sort of achievement framework more transparent.
Sure, but those three levels are pretty difficult. Especially 9-7 is very difficult. I don't know. What are the rules of engagement? Can I talk about some of these levels?
I think it's pretty safe at this point, to be honest.
So 9-4 is interesting because it's all takes place basically on pipes, And it just gives it a very farcical, force-scrolling level that just throws a lot of crap at you. And if you're going for the, especially that last coin is really difficult.
Is this the one with all the bombs as well?
This is the one with all the bombs. And, and in the beginning, like there's an area where if you're slow, they'll blow up and destroy your ground, basically.
Yeah, you'll have nothing to stand on.
Yeah, and then 9-5 is a vertical level that's actually quite tricky. And it's sort of reminiscent of Ice Climbers or something, where, got the penguin suit, you're trying to go up platforms, and some of the platforms are really tricky. At what point it relies upon you freezing baddies to proceed, and some of them are kind of small, so it's easy to fall, and you'll, you know, fall down quite a ways at some places, and you'll have to climb back up. So that's pretty challenging. And then
good to hear the power up sort of getting used in a somewhat different way.
Yeah, I think that Nintendo did a very good job of leveraging the power ups in this game, especially compared to New Super Mario Brothers on DS.
No, that's one of the biggest separations between the two.
I think the penguin suit is brilliant. It's a mishmash of the frog suit and I don't know. I guess sort of like a fireball. In a way. And also a little bit like the Koopa Shell, although easier to manage.
The Koopa Shell, but way better.
Way better. Koopa Shell. Yeah. Koopa Shell's a liability. I mean.
Yeah, it was like the hard mode or something. Yeah. I don't know what to call it.
The last one that I call out, 9-7, is really difficult because the game takes completely on ice blocks that if you have firepower, you'll melt, and there are lots of piranha plants that shooting fireballs at you, and so it's really difficult, and you know, it's kind of, if you can progress through it quickly, that's much better for you, but they make it difficult in where they place the walls and everything. It's kind of hard to jump, and you know, the ground's slippery, so it's really challenging, especially if you want to go for the coins.
Well, I'm glad I just picked up quite a lot of star coins on the Sky World, because that's getting me closer to that.
I would say that 9-7 is the hardest level in the game, and one of the most interesting, definitely.
I guess the reason why there's a lot of pressure on these secret levels in World 9 is because there's so few of them elsewhere. There really isn't a great many of them that are just connected to the regular world maps.
And those that are quite good.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting decision to have so few.
Yeah, I almost felt like it was kind of where we want to prioritize and we don't want to spend the time to create an intricate map. I really get the sense that Nintendo feels like they perfected it in World and don't really want to spend the time to do it again. Kind of like their attitude towards Star Fox 64, unfortunately.
I don't know. I don't think I want to go that far.
It would be nice to see them. I mean, they've done Metroid with this branching areas, you know, plenty of times. It would be nice to see them go back and do something like that for a Mario game. Maybe Mario Galaxy 2 will do it. Who knows?
Well, maybe one novel thing to do, certainly.
Anyway, I've also been playing Sin and Punishment 2, which I received for Hanukkah.
So making use of the Japanese Wii again.
Believe it or not, I am making use of my Japanese Wii. And you know, when I asked for it for a present, I fully assumed that, well, it'll be out in like January, February here. But but now it's like, oh wow, I really it's a good thing.
You're part of the Schadenfreude Brigade, are you? That's rather pleased that it's coming out later.
Yes. So I haven't played too much of it, and I've been playing it on easy. Because that's just sort of the way I approach.
Oh, I have not
like
tried
this.
Easy yet. I intend to try it at some point.
Greg is now actually challenging your credentials, by the way.
Well, that's fine, but you know,
I haven't
with a treasure
tried
game
easy.
Like
I think
this.
It's a good idea. I think it's a good idea, to be honest, because I in some ways I kind of regret playing it on normal in some parts because it ended up being so heavily broken up because you would get stuck so much. There wasn't too much of a flow at times, but. I mean, it was satisfying to overcome that at the same time. It's a bit of a trade-off, really.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I'm of the ilk, I guess is the right word. I believe that with a game like this, the treasure game, where it's quite difficult, even on easy mode, that it's more fun to play it on easy and get a feel for the game and kind of have that roller coaster ride. I mean, this game is balls out action. And yes. It's really, I mean, I've died quite a few times, even on easy mode, and I'm not the best at these sorts of games, but I did play through at least some of Sin and Punishment on the N64. And you know, it's just fun. It's therapeutic to be go around shooting things. It's very old school. The stages themselves are quite long.
They are very long. I was surprised at quite how extended they were.
Yeah, and there's an interesting variety. I mean, it has some areas that are 3D more like going into the stage, and then there's some that are 3D that are 2D kind of going side scrolling, and it just it's really good old school fun, and it requires a lot of focus. So I find myself only playing maybe one or two stages at a time because it just sort of sensory overload.
It very much is. Although I think as long as the stages are, the checkpoints are frequent, so it doesn't have to be mega extended play sessions. You have to play it in to make any kind of progress. So if you do find yourself somewhat worn out by it all, you can play it in short bursts.
Well, one thing I noticed that I maybe just because I didn't play Sin and Punishment on hard mode or what, but it seems like there's a lot more crap jumping out at you in this game than in the original. Like things like oh crap, here's something, go deflect it right away. I don't remember that being there a lot in the N64.
I think some of it is just the game is busier. You know, the graphical power of the console and all that. They've got it all working. And also, I don't think I haven't played easy, but certainly between normal and hard, the content of the game doesn't scale in the same way as it did with the N64 one. Mm. It's just the damn image and all that sort of stuff. So may even be on easy, all the same stuff is there, but you've just got a more of a margin for error for dealing with it.
That's probably the case.
So that's pretty busy compared to the original.
Since I mostly played Sin and Punishment on easy, and I don't know, I only got to maybe halfway through the game on normal before kind of giving up. Moving on, but it's a lot of fun. It's very different from a lot of other things on the Wii. I guess you could say it's similar to something like House of the Dead, but even that's different.
It's I mean, I haven't actually got one of those light gun type games yet. I'm kind of amenable to it, I guess. There's just been quite a few of them. I've never really settled on one being the one to get, and they keep coming out.
But just the fact that you're avoiding things on screen, it makes it feel very different.
It's so involved. Yeah. And Sin and Punishment is so involved. You're always dodging, you're deflecting stuff. There's a certain amount of strategy about which enemies you should prioritize killing because their attack patterns are different and all this stuff. That doesn't seem like it would be there in one of those shooting gallery games to anywhere near the extent.
Yeah, so I'm enjoying it a lot. I have a little bit of concern over longevity just because I'm not a huge score attack person. But I probably would be interested in at least getting through like normal mode without dying on each stage.
It's a pretty long game, and also I'd say the score system has nuances and designs that are much greater than the original.
Yeah, definitely, the multiplier system is very well thought out.
Yeah, because it kind of, because the fact that your multiplier dips as you take damage and then you have to sort of work to get it back up by hitting foes without getting damaged, your performance relative to the score is constantly being assessed, essentially, which I think is a nice sort of continuous way of showing how well someone did in the score. And also, there's a subtlety that I didn't notice when I played through it the first time, which is you spend a lot of the time in the air, but any time that you can go on the ground, if you do, you automatically accrue points.
So really?
It's actually... Yes, you actually just, the score just starts counting up as soon as your feet touch the floor. So what it's doing is encouraging you, and if you, I think if your multiplier is big, that's really significant points that you're earning there. So what it's encouraging you to do is actually in those situations, don't dodge around in the air like a crazy person. Actually kind of make it harder for yourself. But if you can do that, then you can really boost your score a great deal. So it's really subtle stuff, a lot more so than the original, which had a very basic hit count and overall score. So I mean the score attack element of the game is well developed. My only criticism would be is that the stages are long and the score attack sort of is only split up by stage.
Right, if you die near the end, then it's like too bad, you lose your points.
Yeah, you still did well, but you didn't do the whole thing. I think they could have made it more inviting for players if you could actually do score attack based on like a third of each stage, split it up into three sections and have that and make that kind of the gateway point. Like, oh, I'm quite good at this half of a level or whatever. I can do that. I'll play through that. And then you sort of get good at that. And then maybe you can try the whole level at some other point.
So other things I wanted to touch on for the game. It has a crazy-ass story, which I don't think will make sense even
in
English.
Can you fathom any of it with your
No, absolutely
greater
not. No. I don't think that Japanese people understand the story either, as far as I can tell.
I almost hope not, to be honest.
I hope they do, and then they intentionally just scramble it off when they release it in the U.S. It's like, hey, watch this.
It's definitely taking a cue from those animes that just try to confuse the hell out of people, making it look cool.
Yeah, it seems that way. It really does.
But yeah, apparently the girl is like immortal or something. She can like fall into spikes and not die. And
it's a very useful skill in day to day life.
Well, she teleports. That's like she fell like near the beginning. She falls into spikes. And he's like, "Are you okay? Yeah, I'm fine. I'm fine." She like teleports somewhere else, and she's like, "No blood, nothing."
Maybe it'll all make sense. It'll be worth buying the game again. I promise.
That's right. Also, the art direction's odd. I don't remember if maybe you said this before, but the characters kind of look like Gelflings.
Yes,
is that what you said last time?
I think that it was the Dark Crystal puppets.
Yeah,
is
right. The Gelflings, the Dark Crystal puppets. They really do. They have like these elongated features.
Oh, no.
It's like the cutscenes, there's surprisingly little detail at times in the cutscenes.
No, they didn't really sort of amp it up, did they? I mean, I understand, I thoroughly approve of the fact that the game prioritizes the frame rate. It has to prioritize the frame rate because the smooth pointer tracking is essential. Oh, sure. To the gameplay. So, I mean, you know, detail and all that sort of stuff is not important in-game, but they didn't really seem to correct for that in the cutscenes.
The game looks great in motion, in part because there's so much stuff on the screen and things are going so fast. It doesn't really matter that things aren't detailed, really, in the textures.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
Once you slow down and you have the cutscenes, it's like, that console looks really fugly, you know, that you're typing it. You know? It's like N64 quality there.
I did notice that in some of the things, some of the images I've seen, where I'm like, that looks really bad. Like, maybe they should just not release still images of this game.
Yeah.
Just don't. Yeah. Just be the first game they've ever published with no still images.
I'm not going to say it's not literally like F-Zero X or anything, but sort of the priorities are the same. You know what I mean?
Right. As it should be, I think. Especially given the limited resources to develop the game.
Anything else on Sin and Punishment 2 before we...
No, that's about all I have for now, except that I'm definitely enjoying it, and although I wouldn't say it's like Star Fox exactly, it definitely kind of scratches that itch.
Yeah, well, it's definitely as close as we've got for quite a while, I'd say. And I mean, and just finally, I mean, the controls, I mean, you find them, that it makes it a lot more approachable?
Absolutely. I mean, the difficulty level makes it a challenge, but it's not like brain inducing. What the hell does that mean? It's not seizure inducing.
It's kind of what we talked about last week in terms of the difference between the actual challenge of the game and just the accessibility of the interface.
Right.
And this is definitely a more accessible interface to begin with before you have to grapple with the actual difficulty of the game.
I have not tried using the GameCube controller or anything. I don't own a Zapper, unfortunately, so I can't use that.
Well, I'm pretty sure you can simulate it pretty easily.
Anyway, I guess we should probably move on. One last game I played that you guys have talked about at length, but I'm kind of late to the party, is Retro Game Challenge, which I finally bought after we used it for Radio Trivia. I just couldn't resist anymore. Yeah. And it was only $20.
It's been out for quite a while now. It was the start of the year, wasn't it?
Right. So it's kind of strange in that although these are retro games, I wouldn't say that I really got into any of the games they're parodying when I was a kid during the 8-bit era. Like, I played Dragon Quest, but it was on my Game Boy, like for Game Boy Color. And I did play Star Soldier, which is Star Prince is largely based on. But I didn't really have fond memories of it when I played as a kid. So it's really interesting to play these again. And it's like they take the old 8-bit style, but they improve it slightly so that it's more acceptable to modern
taste. It's the adherence is not totally slavish for the product. There's some really adroit little refinements that they make. Like, for instance, one of the things I like most about Star Prince is the idea where you could sort of have that shield that you create.
Yes.
And if you absorb like 3 hits, then it sends out an omnidirectional attack.
Right.
Those kinds of somewhat more sort of advanced gameplay elements would not have been in something like Star Soldier for the NES, or indeed many shooters that followed.
So it's strange because it's also trying to make fun of these annoying aspects of 8-bit games, do this whole thing again just because. So it has that stuff, but at the same time, like, it knows that this isn't the only game. It doesn't have to be arcade evil about a lot of things. So it gives you these codes that can give you infinite lives, basically, or it can, you know, it's not afraid to make it so you can see the ending even if you're not playing really all that well, because it knows, Quest isn't the only game on this thing, so they're not afraid to be generous with what the statistics you get on the level up with the Guardia Quest, right? You know, it's a hard game, but it's not that hard because you don't have to grind for very long. So it's just really interesting compilation. And one thing I will note is I hate the knotback in Haggleman 3, especially when you have the float gear or whatever it's called.
You just keep agonizing.
It's like, no.
Agonizing descent that you can do nothing about. Yeah. And it has, you know, consumable life, so... You know, right. And if you lose them in a certain sense, you'll lose, you know, a fair amount of your progress. Even though it's an explorative game, you know, it's quite a weird sort of, almost a bit Zelda 2-y in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And if you die like that, you know, one fell swoop down a pit rather than just, you know, your energy bar, that's tough. I mean, it is. Hagabat 3 is really interesting, you know, with all the way the upgrade system works and all that. I mean, again, that's more progressive than most of the games that would have been coming out around 1990 or whenever it was supposed to be in the mythology of the game.
Yeah, but overall, it's a really cool game. I mean, I'm not going to say it's the best game ever or anything, but it's definitely a unique title.
It's really nice for a handheld game, I think, you know, because it's a kind of, you know, in one cartridge, you've got a bunch of kind of different gameplay styles that you can go to. You can play them in free play and, you know, play for score where that kind of applies, or, you know, or you can play that sort of meta game that there is, you know, of going through all the challenges and all that. I think it's great for the portable format.
Right. Well, I mean, you pick up the sequel, right?
That's right. Yeah, this segues nicely into what I've been playing this week, because I picked up it's sort of the sequel. It's Game Center CX2, which, of course, Game Center CX, the original, based on the Japanese TV show, it was what Retro Game Challenge was localized from. So obviously you're losing a lot when you don't have the localization from the point of view.
Yeah.
All the kind of, a lot of the jokes about the games and you know.
Right, you shooted 10 enemies or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, although the funny thing is that some of these early games that they have, obviously, because they're being authentic, they do have the weird, like, Japanese English in there.
Yeah, which I would have found more humorous before my stint in Japan, but I still appreciate it.
But I mean, if so, you're losing all the games magazine stuff.
Yeah,
there was really nicely localized for the original, and probably presents a significant barrier to localizing this one, if the first one did not perform that well, to kind of justify the effort, because it is an effort to go to get this carried over. And in fact, more so in this case, because I played the first four games of 8, and I think on this occasion there isn't really any of the direct repeats of it, because Rally King in the original, the racing game, is reprised in almost identical form.
The pacing in the original game leaves something to be desired. I think Johnny talked about it plenty already.
Yeah.
But in the sequel, are they still 8-bit games, or do they go into the 16-bit era?
It covers a pretty similar range, but in terms of the time involved. But it goes a bit different in terms of some of the kinds of games. For instance, the fourth game that I've just got up to is actually a detective adventure game.
Oh, so it's like the Famicom Detective?
Yeah, this ostensibly for the Famicom Disk System, although it's, you know, the game computer floppy drive system or whatever. But, so this is super text heavy.
Oh,
now,
man.
Which would make it completely unplayable. However, you know, you can find on the internet places where people have said, just choose these options and you'll beat the challenges, and then you can play the rest of the games. So, you know, that again would be a significant barrier to localizing the game, because it is a lot, quite a lot of text. quite a lot of effort to go to. And it's actually, this particular game is actually premised around, obviously, the chap that plays, you've got the Game Master or whatever, Areno, mm-hmm. in Retro Game Challenge. So in the Japanese TV show, he's the guy that gets subjected to playing all these old games. They make him do things like play through Calls of Ghosts twice.
Right.
But here, because it's kind of woven into the story of the game, like this detective game, you're actually playing as that man.
Huh.
That's really meta.
Doing sort of office investigations about why the conference room's empty and all that. You know, it's clearly, you know, meant to be funny, meant to be ridiculous. Like, I think there was one puzzle where, like, you're trying to open the door and then someone on the other, there's a voice on the other side of the door, this mysterious voice, and you have to ask it why the door won't open, and they just tell you because it's a sliding door and you've been trying to just open it like it's a regular door. You know, it's just stupid stuff like that. But this is me just going off, you know, fan translations and whatever. Wow. I've been reading through to get through this portion of the game. So as you can see, it would be quite a, that particular part is really a departure from the stuff that's in the original Retro Game Charge, and some of the other ones are too. For instance, you've got basically a Tetris game, mm-hmm. You know, that's supposed to be for the, you know, the handheld version of the game computer or whatever, and then I think the final game is a Super NES game essentially. So that's a step further forward than you ever had in Retro Game Challenge. So I'm looking forward to that. And what that is that one of the games that I just finished the challenges on is called Demon Returns, which is basically Super Mario Brothers with a bit of a Gargoyle's Quest presentation.
Ooh.
So you play with this little sort of cutesy demon guy, and you know, he grows when he gets a power up, and you know, it's got a run button, sort of breakable blocks and all this stuff. But one of the cool things it's got is you've got a similar sort of thing in terms of you can bop an enemy to immobilize it like a Koopa, mm-hmm. but instead of just kicking the shell, you can actually get on top of it and ride around on it. I've only just completed the challenges, so I haven't seen that much of that game yet, but that seems like a really kind of interesting kind of Mario clone. Then the final game is the sort of super version of that.
Okay.
With some Mode 7 stuff in it. Ooh. And all this kind of stuff. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. That should be an interesting thing. So it's a shame knowing that, you know, you're missing out on all the extra stuff that made Retro Game Challenge really a cool experience that ties everything together and the culture references and all that. But still, I mean, the core games that I've played so far, I've been pleased with. And they have the same kinds of little refinements. Like, there's a game that's basically Pac-Man that's called Whizman. But instead of just eating the little pills or whatever, like, there's actually sort of like a dual kind of element to it. Like, you've got a fire and ice thing going on, which just, yeah, it seems kind of trivial, but it just makes it more interesting than just playing something that would literally be a Pac-Man clone. And so those games are still good and they're still fun to play. So I'm glad I've got it. And I do hope that it would get localized. But evidently, by the fact that I chose to buy it, I don't believe that's actually going to happen. All right, well, we'll move on now to James. Do you have anything to contribute before we wrap up new business?
I've got lots of little things that I've touched on. I've started my third, fourth, fifth, I don't know, lifetime playthrough of Lufia 2. I don't know. I've played that game a lot of times, and there's usually about a 2 to 3 year gap somewhere between playthroughs, and I'm at about that point in the announcement of the DS.
It's being remade, yeah.
I'm not even sure I want to use remade, because the story they described for the DS game in no way, shape, or form resembles the story from the SNES game, except for the reuse of the main character.
Okay.
It doesn't even sound like the same game.
Yeah, so in the Silent Hill kind of vein, where maybe there's going to be some central kind of themes or plot points that are retained, but it's not simply retelling the same story.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the same exposition or the same. I haven't even seen much mention of the titular protagonists from the SNES title, who are in the title of the game. Or rather, the antagonists, not the protagonist. I didn't even see mention of them in the story description. I'm like, okay, well, this is interesting.
So I've never played Lufia. I really don't know anything about it. But when you mentioned it was Square behind it, I was really confused until I realized that it was originally a Taito game.
It was, and yes.
Yeah, it's so Square's Empire.
Square's Empire, yes.
Yeah. So it's funny because when they acquired Taito, it wasn't one of the franchises that came up. Did people just kind of say, well, Taito really wasn't making that much? And in fact,
Darius, James, RoboFish must be destroyed, Darius.
It actually, when the DS game was announced, and I went back and reviewed the developer, which was actually Neverland Co., it didn't hit me until then how many games of theirs I put amongst the games that I really like.
So, any observations on reliving the game right now, as opposed to the last time you did a couple of years ago?
Was last time in 2006.
Oh, well, we're about to revisit 2006 in
a
whole different way. You know, it was a different time, James.
It's actually one of the games I pulled out because I was busy waiting for the Wii to come out way back then.
Oh, of course, yes.
Because there wasn't much coming to my GameCube, but it's infinitely better than the initial game in the series, which is Lufia, the Fortress of Doom. yeah, I know. Great title. But it's actually a prequel to that game. So, having come to the games much later, I played the second game first, because basically the first 30 seconds of the first game spoils the end of the second game. Completely. I mean, it spoils every last element of that story in 30 seconds. So I played them out of order, and I couldn't beat one because two is so much vastly better.
Yeah, that's often the case with RPGs. I find that, like, if it's been around for a while, you know, if it's an older game, the second one builds upon the original in so many ways, usually, or even just a few subtle ways in the battle mechanics, that it's really hard to go back and play.
Yeah.
Like, you see it with, like, the Final Fantasies. If you played 4, you probably can't go back and play 1 very comfortably, you know?
No.
Yeah, so...
I had that same problem with the SNES Breath of Fire games, where I played 2, and then I wanted to go play 1. I played 2 because it was available, and I just like, 1 was just like, oh, none of this, thank you very much. But one way in that Lufia, 2, is different is that a lot of the dungeons are heavily puzzle-based, and there weren't random encounters in the dungeons, which on the SNES is kind of a novelty. And I'm not very far into it on this particular playthrough, but I know I'm going to enjoy it, even though it's just kind of a time-filler gameplay right now. I also, in the midst of my shopping, saw in one of the, you know, the bins that they put up near the cash register to get you on your last impulse buys, I saw Tales of Symphonia Dawn of the New World for $14.
No!
Which I know as much as everybody hates it, it's at least worth $14.
I don't know, man. I mean, I played through the whole thing. I put in the time up front. I was going to get my
you,
I mean, it's
you earn your money back.
The first 5 hours are the worst part of the game.
They
it's so drawn out, and even the tutorial is like an hour long. And if you've played the original, or not the original, but if you've played the GameCube one,
yes, which I did.
It's going to be very painful for you. I mean, there are some... And the problem is, it takes an hour, and it doesn't tell you the things you actually care about. It tells you how to do the stuff that it's obvious, but it doesn't explain its elemental system very well, or the whole capturing baddies very well that you can then use in your party. None of that is explained well. The level-up system for the real Pokemon-like creatures, it does not explain the parts that are important that are actually new. So, enjoy that.
Perfect.
The story isn't bad, it just that... It feels very drawn out, and there isn't enough new stuff in there that I cared about.
Yeah, see, I bought it. I had intended to buy it when it came out because I played the original game at least twice, maybe 3 times.
Yeah, that's why I totally, like, instead of playing the first one again, I'm like, oh, I'll hold out and play the sequel, and that was a mistake. I should have just played the original game.
So that's just it. I played the first one at least twice, and because doesn't it actually use your save file from your GameCube game?
You know, it does. I didn't get to do that and see what happened because in the great catastrophic reformatting of 2004 maybe, I lost my save file.
Oh no. I still live in fear of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, see,
I'm going to push the Japanese button, and then I'm going to just push A too many times and reformat my 1,059 block or whatever it was.
Oh, God.
Card.
See, I game-plussed it twice at least.
Yeah.
So I'm actually afraid of what might happen when I go sync these up, if it's going to be something really untenable and completely unmanageable.
Yeah,
I
don't know
what
all transfers over and whatnot, but I'm sure that it'll be worth it.
Yeah, so I decided that when it came out, and it kind of vanished pretty quick from shelves, I guess it didn't do particularly well. And I saw it there. I'm like, well, you know what? Whatever. Just toss it on the pile.
What about the next Tales game that recently came out of Japan, Tales of Graces, is it? Are you
yes.
Are you monitoring that one?
A little bit. It kind of slipped under my radar when it first was announced, so I'm still kind of...
I think the reception in Japan has been quite good.
Yeah, well, I mean, they eat those games up pretty much regardless of what they have.
Sure, but I think better than the one that you've currently been discussing.
Which I haven't started yet, to be clear.
It's
still in its shrink wrap. I've actually been following Dynamic Slash closer simply because it's so over the top.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's got a new name now. Is it Zangeki no Reginlev?
Yes. Okay. Zangeki no Reginlev, yes. I don't even... That trailer is... It's the greatest thing I've ever seen.
It's something like beheading slash something is what it means.
Yeah, it's the first ever Nintendo game to get a 0D.
So apparently it's gory.
It is. It's a Earth Defense Force with Wii Motion Plus. I am stoked beyond belief for this game.
But the interesting thing is, I suppose he's got traditional controls as well. So I'm kind of interested how they square that circle. Like, you know, how differently they play between the two, or how much Motion Plus is really being used. And it's going to have online multiplayer, and it's kind of surprisingly ambitious in certain areas. It's another one of these ones that was announced, the media summit in the winter of 2008 that disappeared for a long time, that's resurfaced, and it's coming out in February in Japan.
There's no way in hell we're ever getting this game, though. I mean, it's just not going to happen.
Where are the Motion Plus games? Maybe we'll save that for later, but seriously.
Yes. Yeah, well, sure. Good point.
I also have been finishing up my experience with the Skycrawlers, having now completed, starting with normal, and then having cleared hard, and then completely destroying the final Aces mode. And then realizing that I can't unlock everything unless I go back and play easy.
It's one of those. Yeah. See, I know because a lot of people have complained about that with achievements and trophies now, that, you know, they sort of put it in so that it doesn't kind of, you don't get credit for clearing easy because you've cleared a more difficult one. You actually have to go back and do the simpler ones that you kind of skipped
that
over.
That is a huge oversight.
Yeah, it's really bad because... And not only did I beat the unlockable, quote, Aces mode, I didn't get shot down the entire playthrough of it.
Yeah,
all 17 levels.
But, you know, you need to make sure that you can do easy. Okay?
That's right. I mean,
to know that fact before we give you the content.
I may just take a nap during some missions and be like, oh, look, I won.
I think what you should do, James, is find someone else who's not familiar with the series.
give it to them,
and they can play
Enjoy.
It on easy.
It would have been easier with the GameCube because you could have given the memory card as well. Whereas now it's tied to the system, it's a bit...
I'm curious what's left to unlock, like little parts and trinkets for my aircraft. Because you can
get red stripes that make it go faster.
You can.
Speed holes. Speed holes.
Sorry, speed holes. Although you probably can get those from the enemies too.
Mm.
But you can actually, you know, there are parts and things to enhance the aircraft's performance in different categories you can unlock. And I'm missing, like, one engine, one body frame, a couple propellers, and a paint. And I'm like, I have to go
the
play
OCD part of you screams.
Stupid mode. Well, I mean, considering I can beat the game now in one sitting, it's not a big deal. It's just, why do I have to subject myself to play the easy mode when I've already definitively proven I can beat this game?
Well, there's two
soundly.
Answers to that. You really shouldn't have to, but on the other hand, I mean, you don't have to.
Yeah.
No, on the other hand, I do have to, because you who you're talking to.
Yeah.
But you know, it's not... I'm going to go ahead and call the game not challenging, but I'm going to struggle with this game, though.
In terms of assessing it.
Yeah, because it's not long. You know, I think I can beat it now in about 3 hours. But, you know, my initial playthrough was probably in the 7 neighborhood because of failure. And there was failure.
Mm-hmm. And then there's a harder mode.
Yeah, and then there's a harder mode. And then there's an unlockable, even harder mode.
To me, that's enough replayability in my book for this kind of a game.
Yeah, if that's but if you're interested in replaying the aces mode, so you can say I am the ace of aces.
Well, Greg, how long is Sin and Punishment too? I mean, I've only gotten through maybe half of it.
It's surprisingly long. It's got to be twice as long as the original game, if not longer.
Yeah, I've heard it's pretty long.
Okay. It's probably pushing like it's probably somewhere in that 7 to 10 range, maybe. 10's probably a bit high.
Playing it just on like normal.
On normal, yeah.
Wow, that's impressive.
And then there's hard, and yeah, that is. I've been working my way through that very slow, very near the end now, because it's quite testing. But yeah, I mean, I think it's not dissimilar. I mean, my question to you, James, would be in terms of it being easier, is it easier just because of the kind of some of the finer points of balancing, or is it easier because it's been dumbed down at a more fundamental level?
I wouldn't say it's been dumbed down. It's just not. Well, here's the thing. The other games that they make have the same problem, where as you play through the game, you unlock new aircraft or new airframes and new bits and pieces. And when you get to Aces mode, at the very least, you've already beaten the hard mode. So you've already unlocked most of the stuff. So you're not crippled by having what essentially amounts to dummy aircraft number one. And the game doesn't compensate for the fact that you know,
it's just a bit of an RPG kind of problem where it hasn't really scaled with the improvements in your ship.
So there's essentially one aircraft that I used for the entirety of the Aces playthrough, unless the mission necessitated I use a different one, that I became untouchable in because it's just so ridiculously unbalanced.
Mm. Well, that does sound like a balancing issue. I mean, I know the idea of getting people to collect this stuff is that it has a tangible yield that you will feel more empowered in this aircraft by virtue. But if it's getting to that point where you're unassailable, I think that's taking it too far.
This is actually a bigger problem in there. In the Xbox game, because you can take the unassailable aircraft online. So basically, you come into online matches, and everybody's using that one aircraft, and it's just like, oh, you're shot down again. Oh, and you're gone again, and again, and again. So it's everybody's down 20 times, but has 100 kills. It's like the ultimate, just completely level playing field. No skill required. What I'm going to struggle with this game is they recently announced its price, which is much less.
Price should not be an issue when you're reviewing.
Well,
the game.
It is an issue though.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, it isn't.
It is. It is. A 7-hour game is worth less than a 12-hour game.
So you think it's a recommended purchase at $30?
Right. And whereas at $50, I might go, it's harder to recommend the game at that price point. At $30, there's no reason not to buy this game. It is 100% buy. At $50, it's like, well, are you a fan?
Yeah. Okay. Okay.
That's where I'm going to struggle with it. Just how to express the fact that it's a budget game that's not a budget game, if that makes sense.
It's budget price, but you don't
think
it's
not a budget game.
The production values and stuff.
No, and in fact, I'm going to go ahead and announce this game's already getting 2 nominations for our 2010 Game of the Year, which would be Best Audio and the best bargain or something.
Best dirigible.
So the voice acting is actually good in this game.
Well, it's done by professional voice actors that did stuff like Ghost in the Shell.
There's not a great abundance of that on Wii. I certainly would
no,
like to hear.
I'd certainly like to hear
the other nominees.
It's got good sound effects and it's got music that's actually better than the movie's music.
Hmm.
I actually heard the music. I'm like, they must have stolen this from the movie. And I went and I looked at the movie soundtrack. It's completely different music in a completely different style.
Well,
it doesn't sound anything like the movie music. It's just how many ways can we repackage this one song while playing it with a harp? It's so weird.
Okay, so that's going to do it for new business. And then when we come back after this break, we, as promised, we're going to go and take a look at the Wii at 3.
Here's a quick look at the best original content at our website. Now playing at NintendoWorldReport.com.
Now that Christmas is over, there's nothing left to do but sit back and enjoy the rest of the holidays. Of course, we here at Nintendo World Report never rest, and this week is no exception.
Neil Ronahan gives us his impressions of Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles The Crystal Bears.
This week's review lineup features Astro Boy for DS and a slew of Wii reviews, including Modern Warfare Reflex, Jurassic the Hunted, and Need for Speed Nitro.
We also have previews of Shin Megami Tensei: Strange Journey for the DS, along with Shiren the Wanderer and Trauma Team for Wii.
Our bloggers were also busy this week. Neil laments his lack of discipline with EA Sports Active, and James Charlton tells us what he'd like to see done with the Wii Achievement System.
And don't forget to check out the NWR Newscast and TYP's own Radio Trivia podcast. Have a happy holiday, and we'll see you next week. Back, and now we're going to get into our look back at the life of the Wii so far. So yes, it has been more than 3 years. Obviously it was November 2006 in North America, and I think December for Japan and Europe, and since then it's, you know, become this commercial behemoth and sold more than 60 million units all over the world, and is the clear market leader everywhere, which Nintendo had never even done before in Europe. So it's all, you know, pretty momentous stuff. But I wanted to take a look back at what it's meant for us, for gamers, for Nintendo fans, and, you know, what the experience of the 3 years has really been like. So we're going to jump right into that now. The first part that I wanted to concentrate on was some of the hardware-related concerns. First of all, the graphics. So obviously, it was a big, somewhat controversial thing at the time that Nintendo was essentially going to sidestep the whole generational leap thing in graphics and not keep pace with Sony and Microsoft and release something that was fundamentally similar to the GameCube in that area. And how did you feel, James, for instance, at the time when that was announced? You know, was it a big deal for you? Were you very disappointed or crestfallen, as some people seem to be?
Well, it depends on which announcement we're talking about here. Because when they first did that E3 where they just held up a piece of plastic and said, "This is the future," they had kind of the I believe that was the 3 to 5 times more powerful than the GameCube comment came out.
Yeah, it was something like, or was it 2 to 3? I forget. It was something like that.
Because I remember I did the mental math on that, and then I actually wrote the mailbag a letter because I wasn't staff at the time, and I believe it was, I can't remember who answered it, but said, "Oh, it's probably just something that she said out of the corner of her mouth, having seen games." And it turned out she was probably, that was probably the most accurate statement in regard to that, because at the time, if you did the math and you up the processor speeds by a factor of 3 to 5, that was still a fairly potent console, but I had kind of tuned back my expectations. So when I finally... See, I don't think we finally had a real grasp on what the console was capable of until the launch games came out, because even when we had those Red Steel images from the initial issue of Game Informer, they looked a lot better in still images than they actually looked.
I think there was some touching up going
No. There's no think about it. There was touching up done on a major level.
But of course, I mean, I think, as you said, that was the beginning of it, the sort of the scaly back of expectations where they threw that number out there, I think somewhat inadvertently, because you didn't hear it again.
Right, and it was wrong. I mean, it's not an accurate statement either.
Sure. But obviously, when we got to the point where it's like, well, Twilight Princess is going to be a launch game that's on both the GameCube and Wii, and you know, you knew which way the wind was blowing with that. So for you, James, you kind of eased your way into it over time.
Oh, see, that's just it, though. I'm still not sure what the Wii's capable of.
Yeah, that's part of it, too. I think a lot of it is that the graphical hardware and the limitations of it, it isn't really a big deal to me. To me, the bigger deal is his lack of, like, art direction and people that aren't developers that aren't interested or don't have the funds or whatever, don't feel necessary to take advantage of the hardware, the way that people were able to leverage the GameCube. I mean, because there were a lot of great games on the GameCube that looked awesome, and we just don't see that as often on Wii. They just don't prioritize the graphics.
So that would be my first question related to this then. So taking it as a sense of, well, you know, the hardware specs in themselves don't mean a whole lot
They do, but they're not everything, I think.
Well, they're not the whole ball game coming in. Has the actual experience of the past 3 years therefore been a disappointment to you relative to what you thought could be done using sort of incrementally better hardware?
I wouldn't say necessarily at the fault of the hardware.
Yeah,
I'm saying the experience of the games you have played personally, has it been below what you were hoping for, even though you knew it was going to be a less graphically powerful system?
Oh, definitely. I would say that I could count on one hand the number of games on the Wii that look better than Wind Waker does.
Yeah.
And Wind Waker was what?
2003.
Yeah, I mean, it's
2002 in Japan, actually.
It's a relatively early GameCube game. And
it is.
And there's probably, what, 6 games total that look better on Wii? And the Wii is a more powerful system. I mean, it's not...
And also, you know, the techniques, programming, software development has moved on in the interim. You should be able to do more with less.
It's not just that. The system... I mean, this is a little inside baseball. The GameCube wasn't a well-designed system. It had some fairly noteworthy flaws in its design that they resolved in the Wii. Appreciably, they should be getting more than the incremental power boost out of it because it's a more efficient system and because they have more efficient coding techniques.
It really comes down to graphics aren't a focus of the development teams that are dedicating themselves to Wii. You know, Nintendo has a few teams that care. You know, Super Mario Galaxy looks beautiful, but, you know, they don't really care about having good-looking graphics for Wii Sports Resort or Wii Fit because they almost see, like, impressive graphics is almost being intimidating to their target audience. They want something that's simple, friendly. It's like, oh, this doesn't look like it's that hard to approach because, you know, it's simple caricatures, you know?
Well,
and the third parties that really, really care about graphics aren't going to focus on Wii because they're going to go to the HD consoles.
Yeah.
So, well, I think all of these things are true, but I mean, has the reality of that experience been an appreciable disappointment in, you know, of, you know, living through this now and playing these games?
In terms of the technology, in terms of like the graphics?
Well, in terms of the kinds of experiences that you've had over the past 3 years, do you feel they've been less than you hoped they would be?
Absolutely.
Because they haven't applied the effort in that area?
Absolutely. We might be getting ahead of ourselves here a little bit, but just looking at my gaming habits over the last 2 years, ever since I got done with Super Mario Galaxy, I've been kind of in a slump. I haven't really been playing many video games because Nintendo first-party games are kind of my core titles, and there really wasn't much for me over the last 2 years. And I didn't migrate over to PlayStation 3 very well, so I found myself in no man's land.
Well, I mean, that's definitely going to be kind of key question I think we're going to close on. It's just, you know, the quality of the games themselves and how well Nintendo fans have been sort of serviced.
To bring it back to the hardware, I think more than graphics, the real limitations have been in the storage space, in lack of digital audio, and most importantly, the lack of online infrastructure that's manageable. I think that's far more important than having HD. I think HD is neither here nor there. A lot of the reason why we don't see some of the games we probably would like isn't necessarily because of the graphics, but because there is not a well-structured online environment that third parties can leverage, or even first parties can leverage.
Yeah, it's basically the Wild West when it comes to online strategy. Just do whatever the hell you want. Just you better use friend codes.
It's hands off, and you know, it's a case of whether certain developers want to try and pick up the ball and run with it. But even in that case, it seems that it's quite difficult to do that.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen developers that come out and say they're overly committed to it, and then just fall flat on their face. Yeah. And I am explicitly looking at you, the conduit.
Yeah, of course.
Well, but I mean, like, you know, other systems have downloadable content. Not that I really care too much about this, but other systems have add-on packages or downloadable content, which are cheaper to develop and kind of can help get money back from development costs for these developers and publishers. And Nintendo's Wii can't do that because there isn't enough storage space and the infrastructure to really be able to do this downloadable content.
Well, I mean, it's certainly been shown that it's somewhat possible. You know, they've had the storage sort of fix this year, and they had you've had Guitar Hero and Rock Band and all that sort of stuff. But the fact that It wasn't set up for it from day one and all this sort of stuff. It changes how developers approach it. It changes perceptions of users.
It's still kind of a patchwork fix, to be honest.
Exactly. I mean, you'll see huge add-ons to some other games that really have a brand new mode to the game that you've just downloaded. Like, what is it, for Resident Evil 5, they have something that was pretty big as a downloadable add-on. And I haven't seen anything like that for Wii. Has there been anything beyond like an additional song or something like that in terms
not
of
really.
Or new levels?
Not that I could readily call to mind, certainly. But I think we go back to some of the issues about with visuals. I mean, I guess one of the things that I kind of had to get used to with it when we had this announcement was, you know, I'd got used to the fact that, you know, over previous console generations that, you know, Nintendo's games were going to kind of wow me in some way. You know, they offered, you know, stuff like Star Fox, F-Zero, Super Mario 64, Ocarina of Time. You know, these are landmark technical events as well as great games at the time.
Right.
And GameCube also. I mean, as you said, you know, that there were really tremendous visual experiences on GameCube. Wind Waker being probably really chief among them for me, and so it was a process to think, well, you know, the next big Zelda game, or you know, the next big Metroid or whatever it's going to be, you know, they are not going to make that impact on me, you know, probably ever again, because I guess, you know, once you take this step back, you know, they're probably never going to vault to the head of the queue again, and certainly the success of Wii makes that seem practically impossible. So, I mean, that was an adjustment, but I think I've kind of, that part of it, I've kind of ceased to care about, really. I mean, certainly when you look at something like Galaxy, I think you see that it can still kind of impress you and have a sense of wonder about it, even though it isn't that cutting edge because of what they did with the art direction and the fact that they did pretty much all that they could. They didn't cut corners. Right. So I suppose I would share with you the sense that there hasn't been, you know, even from Nintendo, the most effort applied, because it makes sense that everyone else is not going to have their most sort of graphically preoccupied teams working on Wii games. You accept that. But Nintendo can only work on Wii. Mm-hmm. So surely that segment of the company that produced all these landmark, you know, technical sort of things in the past would still want to push the boat out as far as they could on Wii. But that hasn't happened all that often.
No.
So far. And I have found that to be somewhat disappointing, I must say.
Well, to be fair, you know, Twilight Princess was dual platform, and one of the teams that would be pushing the graphics would be the Zelda team. So
yeah, definitely.
We have to kind of wait and see what this next Zelda looks like.
I think the next Zelda season is a big deal, because definitely look at Ocarina of Time and Wind Waker. I mean, those were two big kind of wow factor games for me. You know, those experiences of seeing, playing them for the first time, there was a sense of wonder about playing them, and whether they could still do that on Wii with this next Zelda, when by the time it comes out, you know, at the end of 2010 at the earliest, presumably may well be 2011, yeah, the Wii is going to be aging in itself, let alone the fact that it's, you know, basically from 2001.
Yeah.
So it would be, I mean, I assume it's going to have to do it more based on the motion controls is how it's going to have to engender that sense of discovery this time. But I mean, that might be where I feel it the most acutely, because I love, for me, Zelda in that way is something that, you know, I really kind of value, that visual element.
Well, see, I think, honestly, I think depending on what they do with the style, they could still visually wow you. I think if...
They could.
I think you could put out a game like Wind Waker now, and it would still be a pretty jarringly pretty game to look at, because it's just it's an artistic decision that you can do on limited hardware, but still be blown away by how it looks and still say, this is a technically proficient game, even though it's not a big resource user.
Yeah.
People are still wowed by some DS games, and I don't even mean that in the cause of, oh, for a handheld, this is great. Some DS games just genuinely look pretty good. And so if it's the case for a DS, it can certainly be the case for a Wii game.
Yeah,
I think so, which I think is what that was definitely the mindset that I had sort of coming into it. So that is why it's kind of probably performed a bit below expectations for me. But I mean, one thing I wonder about in terms of the issue of HD, you know, at the time, it was concerned for some people, perhaps, but maybe not for that many people. Do you think the standard definition limitation has become more glaring and more of an issue as we've gone in time, and obviously there's way more people with HD TVs now?
I think it looks more and more like a bad decision. I don't think it hurts them any more or less. I think but it becomes more apparent that their future gazers weren't as smart as they claimed to be.
Well, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think look, at the end of the day, you can't argue with the sales
no,
system.
No, you can't.
Know, but in terms of just from your point of view, your experience, you know, I mean, you've upgraded your audiovisual setup. I know, James, and so have you, TYP,
mm-hmm,
and,
yep.
and so have I. So we're
yes.
all in different places in that regard than we were in 2006. And you know, given that experience, you know, do we feel differently about it now than we did when we started?
I think. And we touched on this a few weeks ago, and I think I looked it up and said Christmas of 2007 was the first year that the big doorbuster items on Black Fridays were HDTVs. And that was kind of a Rubicon that was crossed, where Nintendo's internal teams, when they made the decision to not do HD, must have thought to themselves, oh, shit. Because when you first listen to them talk, they're like, oh, well, nobody has HDTVs, they're not catching on real quick, it's going to be a while before they reach mainstream. And then a year down the line, bam, there they are. And people are getting them in their homes, and the prices are dropping faster than you could ever have imagined they would drop. They've become increasingly affordable, and in fact, they're squeezing non-HDTVs out of the market. I mean, it's hard to go to a store and buy an SD
James,
set right now.
Not everyone who buys an HD TV really cares that much if Wii is HD.
No, I'm not saying it was bad there. I'm saying that they're future watchers who estimated what role HD
would
play.
But was that really the premise, though? I mean, I think
well,
it
it's
just...
it's their, what they stated was going to.
That's
was...
what they stated, but that's what they stated.
I honestly don't believe they anticipated the expansion that the HD market was going to have.
I don't know, but I think the point that TYP makes is well taken from the point of view that, you know, that it's still, if you, as you say, you know, because they're becoming so ubiquitous, for a lot of people, it may not be so much about buying a HD TV as it is about buying a new TV.
Or buying a flat screen TV that looks cool.
Yeah,
something
that fits.
I mean, just look at the sales of Blu-rays. I don't think Blu-ray players have taken off really.
No,
all
they
that
have.
Much. And part of it's probably because you can get HD content through other venues now, but part of
sure.
it's just that people still watch regular DVDs on it, and they don't know any better. You know, a lot of people are like, what, DVDs aren't HD? I didn't know that, you know? Talking to my parents. I mean, so, you know, especially for the new demographic Nintendo was going for, this sort of expanded audience, they aren't as tech savvy.
But coming back again to the personal element, I mean, when I bought my Wii, it was hooked up, you know, to a CRT TV, and you know, today it isn't. And I think in between, it hasn't really made a big difference to me. You know, I mean, I've gone into a world where, you know, I play PS3, I've watched TV in HD, all that stuff, and Wii is, you know, does it look great? But, you know, there's still some advantages to having it on a more modern TV in terms of
yep.
you know, the fully vibrant kind of color that you can get, especially in, you know, some of these more colorful games that are, you know, quite prevalent on Wii. And to me, it hasn't made a big difference, that kind of transition. I was just wondering whether you felt similarly as you've gone through the same thing, for instance, TYP.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice to have widescreen. But
yes,
I don't really care too much. The only complaint I really have, and it sounds silly, but I wish it supported like DVI, even though it would maybe only be 480p. There were projectors out there that I've brought things to parties and I want to connect it to the projector, and the projector only has like a DVI connector and a VGA connector. And it would be nice to be able to plug it into that monitor and get a better picture than S-Video.
Of course, James,
you know?
Has his VGA box.
That's right. I went through the trouble of ordering from China my super awesome VGA connector that I actually had to get because my monitor didn't have any friggin' cables that
connect
to the
Wii. Yeah, and as you
Wii.
Said, well, that's a practicality concern rather than
the VDigi cable that is of questionable manufacture, but at the very least, it works well.
Mm-hmm.
We'll close out the hardware kind of focus portion of this just by saying, was there a point looking at the graphical fidelity in particular that you said, you know what, I want to see what gaming's cutting edge looks like, and that actually influenced you to buy another console, or was it predominantly for other reasons?
I bought my PlayStation 3 because I wanted to play PlayStation 2 games, but wanted something that could play newer games as well.
Yes, and I bought my 360 because I had a complex mental calculus that I brought into play that said if there was a point where there was a number of games at
there was a tipping point of software.
It was like 1.5 times the price of the console, and with the Xbox, I sat there one day and I did the math, and I hit it right after they had the price drop on the 360, and I kept going. Yeah. And I'm like, well, that's it. I have to get this game.
So it was the point being, it was about the software itself rather than, you know, what the software kind of represents.
A lot of the cutting-edge games are games that I'm not terribly interested in playing. I mean,
no.
I mean, there are some exceptions, but I mean, I'm interested in Final Fantasy. What is it? Is it 13 that's coming
13.
Out?
13. Yeah.
I mean, that's when I'll pick up because I've only played one Final Fantasy. I figure I finally own, you know, a modern system that has a contemporary Final Fantasy game. I may as well get it.
Yeah.
But and it looks great. But you know, like I'm not running out there to buy even games that have been told that are really good, like Uncharted and Uncharted 2. I really should pick these up, but. I mean, I'm not.
I find myself very much in the same position. I mean, I bought a PS3 basically because the value became a lot better, you know, when they cut the price down really severely just recently. Obviously, you got a good deal on it back when it had backwards compatibility.
That's right.
Which definitely would have raised the value for me if that had ever, you know, because I didn't have a PlayStation 2 and there's plenty of PS2 games I'd like to play. So, I mean, that would have been a big part of it again for me. So it was about the software for me. There was never any sort of point where I became disillusioned with what I was getting out of the Wii that kind of led to it.
No.
I haven't played very many sort of HD games so far, just a handful like Batman and Dead Space, but I mean, from what I've played, I do feel there's a sort of complementarity between the experiences that could certainly coexist with the kinds of things you get on Wii. But we'll move on now into the next sort of segment that I wanted to talk about, which is about innovation. Now, obviously, the whole, yeah, you know, it was called the revolution for years, you know.
Yeah, that word kind of became almost a pseudo swear word when somebody defended something, which is saying it's innovation.
Yeah, but so it was always, you know, we're back when we knew nothing about it other than it was ostensibly going to be this sort of sea change in the way gaming was configured one way or another, and of course we discovered that it was, you know, the controller that was going to be such a big part of that. So I guess the first thing that I want to concentrate on is, you know, what the controller has actually done for our experiences over the last 3 years versus, you know, some of our hopes and expectations when it was, you know, first revealed, and, you know, the E3 2006 and all that sort of thing. So I mean, TYP, how have you found that motion control has kind of affected the way you play games versus how you would have thought?
Well, I'm surprised that we haven't seen more flying and swordplay games, and part of that might be because the motion controls weren't precise enough, which is why we're seeing Motion Plus.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was probably one of the big realizations that came pretty quickly.
Yeah,
was that it was the imprecision of it.
Yeah, but other than that, I mean, I've been pretty happy with it. I don't really mind the quote-unquote fewer buttons or whatnot. I mean, I think that it's very satisfying that the games that use the pointer aspect of the controller, I found to be very satisfying, at least the ones that have good gameplay to go along with that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And games that, like the touchscreen that was overused and then scaled back, games that are more subtle and clever about the use of motion controls, those are also very satisfying, you know, just tilting your controller for New Super Mario Bros. Wii to shift some platforms. That's cool. I like that. You know, I don't like the stupid shaking I got in Family 20-in-1 Pack, whatever the name of that game was.
Oh, yes!
But, you know, so it goes both ways. And but games that actually genuinely are trying to have a fun experience that aren't quick cash-ins, I think, often do succeed with these controls.
Well,
and the controller has its limitations, but overall, I'm pretty happy with the controller.
But my first question about how it's really sort of enhanced what has it mostly done? I mean, is it mostly the new experiences, the really new stuff, like the kind of the Wii Sports kind of stuff, or, you know, some other things that you might put in that category, or the enhancements to more existing gameplay structures, so your RE4 Wii editions, your Metroid Prime 3, so, you know, which has been more significant for you, James, in terms of the games that you've played?
I think it's kind of a mix of the two. I think that neither either has seen, I think it's kind of created its own genre of these simple motion games that simply wouldn't have existed without it.
Sure,
and,
yeah.
And they're very social experiences, and it is a brand new experience. People love doing the Frisbee game, you know, people love bowling, and they're good little games. I mean, they're not, I'm not going to try to choose one over the other. For me, as a gamer, I care more about the Metroid Prime 3 with the pointer control, you know, but... Mm. But I doesn't dismiss these other games with different controls.
No, sure, but I mean, what do you think it's been more successful at, really? You know, in terms of looking at the volume of titles and how much it's brought to the experience.
I'd have to say the casual stuff, just because that's what seems to have caught on in the public mind share, and a lot of the games that might have leveraged the controller for more traditional gaming experiences. Have stayed away from Wii because they feel that that's not where the target demographic is. And so I think that just as a combination of what the developers are interested in doing on Wii, I think that the Wii Sports type motion control games have been more successful, at least commercially.
Well, yeah, there's definitely the commercial aspect.
But even in terms of just number of people enjoying it and what people think of when they think of Wii, they think of these other motion games.
I think the biggest thing for me of what they've done there in terms of the success is making it inclusive. You're making gaming inclusive again, if you like. You know, people say it was more inclusive years ago when it was simpler, and they have done that, I think, very successfully with those kinds of games. But going on to what they've done with some of these enhancements with traditional sort of experiences, I mean, how much have you enjoyed that part of it? I mean, did you feel that, you know, Metroid Prime 3, for instance, was a lot more enjoyable because the control scheme was more elegant, or indeed, you know, Sin and Punishment 2 that we discussed earlier is similar
Sin
thing.
Sin and Punishment 2 is definitely more enjoyable on a Wii than Sin and Punishment.
It had a bad control scheme on the N64.
It had an awkward control scheme.
As for the Metroid series, I think it was more fun and it felt more fluid on Wii. Whether it was vital to me enjoying it, I don't think so. I certainly enjoyed the GameCube games, but I'm not going to poo-poo something that's an improvement. It absolutely is a good thing.
I think the Wii game was just a more fluid game in general. I don't think anything to do with the controls.
Some of it was the design. Yeah, it wasn't just the controls.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we've given some of these other motion games a bad rap too. Like games like Boom Blocks clearly could
have
been another game.
I think Boom Blocks, I mean, if I was going to name some of the new experiences outside of Wii Sports, I think Boom Blocks would be absolutely front and center. You know, it's a similar sort of thing. You know, it is social. It's leveraging what's good about the Wii Remote, with the pointer, essentially, and then, you know, keeping it sort of limited in terms of the nuance with just using the accelerometer and things like that. And, you know, it's not the kind of game that I'd played before, but I've enjoyed playing it now. And that's only happened because of the change that was made with the interface. So, I mean, you certainly have to give credit there. A few other examples I thought of, some are a bit in between. Like, for instance, I mean, Tiger Woods with Motion Plus is radically different from what it was before.
It should be.
That's somewhere between an enhanced experience and a totally new one. Because it is so radically enhanced that it's almost...
Is it appreciably better?
Oh, I think so. More fun and better. You know what I mean? Like you feel like you're more in control. It feels like a better designed game now. But it's also more fun because it's more tactile, because it's more physical. So, I mean, that for me is quite a big deal. And then another one which is a bit weird is what they did with Pro Evo. Because they sort of turned a sports game, a soccer game, into like a quasi-RTS, which is really interesting and really different. And, you know, it's leveraging the pointer again. That, again, is a kind of experience that we only kind of made possible in the console space. I guess you could have done this on PC maybe before.
You could have, yeah.
But not that anyone sort of tried, but...
No, I mean, but it does sort of manifest the strategy of sports in a way that games haven't really in the past.
Exactly.
Unless you want to count NFL head coach, which in which case I'm going to have to ask you to leave.
Yeah, I don't know much about that, but it always seemed to be spectacularly redundant. I think it's a bit more of a significant shift in that. But I guess one of the most interesting things about it that I, coming into the process when we was in 2006, is, you know, we're being told that, you know, GameCube was all about being, you know, the system just for games. games, you know, wasn't like a DVD player like PS2. It didn't have the emotion engine in it or whatever. You know,
it, it plays games.
It was a no-nonsense kind of game. It was like, supposed to be quicker to develop for, easier to develop for. And of course, when you come to Wii, I mean, that's doubly true. And you don't have to burden yourself with HD and all this kind of stuff. You know, you
I want to use the phrase burden, though.
Yeah, well, it is a burden. It's a financial burden in terms of you've got to invest. You've got to get the capital to make a game of that kind of scale. That is a burden on you. If you have a creative ambition that you want realized and you're going to hitch your wagon to using HD, that is an extra burden to carry before you get to carry through on your vision. I mean, it's also, you know, could be a great boon to fulfilling your vision, but it comes with costs attached.
Yeah.
It seems like an artificial thing, though. I mean, part of the problem was that at least Microsoft went out and said, no, you all have to be HD. And I guess Sony did the same thing. Aren't all Sony games HD?
I think they mandated 720p, basically.
Yeah. If Nintendo had supported HD and have but say, you know what, it's okay if you just do 480p. We're not gonna kill you over it. That would have made all the difference, I think.
I agree with that. That is, I know Johnny has raised that point that, you know.
Yeah, Johnny mentioned a couple of weeks ago.
When Nintendo make the jump to supporting HD output, they almost certainly won't make it mandatory. You know, even for their own games, let alone everyone else's.
Yeah.
I think that's right. I think that because you shouldn't have to be in a situation where if you want to appeal to the market that the 360 or the PS3 have, you're immediately kind of forced to live up to certain standards that really might not be right for your game.
Right. It's an agenda set by Sony and Microsoft to look like they're cutting edge technology more than caring like, well, just make the game you want to make.
It's about perception. It's about spin. Yeah. It's not about creating the game. But that's the interesting point. So the Wii doesn't have that. The Wii is about, you've got a new interface. You've got this, you know, the cheap and easy to develop for. People could get in. Let's see what you can do. And so you might have thought that it'd be this great playground for original ideas and games that we haven't seen before. And what I want to know is what you think about in these 3 years. You know, what have we seen that or not?
Maybe in limited games. I mean
obviously some of the ones that we've already mentioned would definitely qualify, but I'm talking about, this is more about across the whole spectrum of the software library. You know, has there been greater sort of originality and diversity as a result of this or not? My feeling would be probably not.
No. I mean, the publishers are still publishers and they're gonna poo-poo high risk things, and I think where we've seen a little more of it possibly is in WiiWare, which I haven't really been big on, but there certainly is slowly been growing and slowly gaining in diversity.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly true for other, I mean, digital distribution generally, but yeah, I mean, WiiWare has definitely been is growing. I mean, you know, obviously has only been going for about half as long as the Wii. So you're not comparing kind of like with like, but so I would say it's kind of in terms of the originality is probably ahead.
I mean, you're not seeing a bunch of bonkers new ideas coming around. Kind of, you know, I was listening to a recent Retronauts episode where they were talking about how when the CD came out with PlayStation, developers started kind of going hog wild and doing all sorts of stuff. Not all of it worked well, but they were trying. And I don't think you've seen that on Wii.
No, because the analogy with the CD thing was, look, you were freed from the bondage of cartridges, which were so damn expensive. And, you know, you couldn't really be that experimental because, you know, your game was going to cost so much at retail that people were going to expect certain things of it, but it wasn't going to be like a casual buy. They were going to have to fulfill certain needs. Whereas once you had CD games, which were cheaper to publish, and then ultimately people buy at the store, then maybe you could sell them something that they weren't so sure they wanted, but, you know, for the right price they would. And the same would be true on Wii. In terms of there's more budget games, they're cheaper than Xbox games anyway, you know, $60, $50. But
right.
I agree with you, TYP. I don't think we've seen that kind of experimental streak manifested very strongly.
I think part of it is that in the scenario with the PlayStation, the bar was being lowered for the cost of entry. In this situation, we kept it about the same.
Sure.
Relatively
yeah, the
speaking,
dynamics
versus,
are different.
Versus
yeah.
the HD going up more. So it wasn't like all of a sudden you had more slack space in your budget. It's now like, well, we have less budget elsewhere and we have the same for Wii.
And it requires you to do more thinking than you had to do in previous games too. I mean, you have to accommodate whatever kind of control scheme you decide you're going to adapt for this particular game.
Well, how about we narrow it down a little bit to Nintendo specifically, first party output. What have they done? You know, how is their output more original, more daring than it has been before in total, looking at the whole picture?
I think initially it was. I mean, the Wii yeah. Sports was definitely very daring, and the Wii Fit, that was daring. I mean, there's been a lot of, I don't know, internal development, things that have maybe been thrown on the cutting room floor. I don't know what, but the output from Nintendo has not been as strong as I would have anticipated. And I'm sure there's some reasons, but...
Yeah, this is something we're definitely going to return to firmly not too long, but that... Just on this specific point, I think you've seen a polarization in terms of there've been certain games that where they're trying to appeal to the expanded audience, which have been
right.
you know, more daring by virtue of who they were aiming for originally to begin with, and then the games that have been aimed at their traditional fans or the follow-ups to the games that were daring in the first
right.
place have actually been a little, you know, a bit more turtle shell kind of attitude,
yes.
and they've played it very safe.
Wii Fit Plus is the perfect example for this. I mean, it's an expansion pack.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be...
Yeah.
And they released it as a full-fledged game because, I don't know. I mean, I honestly can't answer the question of why they released that as a full-fledged game. Is it because they were concerned that...
Because they don't have the downloadable content hard drive space, basically.
See, I thought it was more because they were concerned that their target consumers couldn't
they
use
don't
it.
Really want to be a part of that. They
right.
want to, you know, this is a retail console, and
yeah.
so, you know, I mean, that's something that they very firmly sort of established. Well, I mean, going on to that then, I guess the next thing I wanted to talk about is we know... how much they've sold. You know, they've sold all these, you know, 60 million units of consoles. They've sold all these units of Wii Fit to these people that hadn't bought consoles before, or, you know, certainly hadn't bought Nintendo things before. But I guess the main question for me is, you know, is this really creating new gamers, or is it, you know, are they actually remaining engaged with their consoles after they've bought them, or did they kind of just hitch their wagon to the Wii kind of fad, if you wanted to call it that, as some people have? I mean, I don't know about sort of how people's experience of this is in terms of anecdotal evidence. James, for instance, I mean, what's your sense of that kind of issue?
It's become a in people who sort of bought it for that particular function. It's become sort of like a game they pull out when they have guests over.
Right.
It's like the board games they keep locked up in the closet that never really come out, unless, you know, they're going to have cocktails over at their house and everybody's had a few drinks and now they can go play Pictionary. And unlike Pictionary, there's now an added element of risk besides someone drawing something that looks like an obscene object, but it's basically the same. It's basically the same sort of event.
Sort of fun, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly the way I would think of it. I actually wrote that down in my notes, is that it's for a lot of people, it's a lot like a board game. And whether or not the board game sticks, or it stacks for a few years, or if down the road they'll see digital video games as another form of this kind of board game social activity, remains to be seen. I don't think we'll really know until the next system comes out, and we'll see, well, why would I need that? I already have my Wii. They might be saying that.
Yeah.
And they might say, well, gee, this is a novel new technology too. I can enjoy my Wii and I can enjoy this other thing, you know. I can enjoy Monopoly and I can also enjoy Pictionary, you know. So
Well, I guess they would definitely have to differentiate the experience in
absolutely.
Probably a much different way than we did in the past, than just having better graphics and sound.
In the casual market is certainly willing to buy more technology if they feel there's value. I mean, just look at the
right.
iPods. I mean, how many iPods do non-techie people own? I mean, if Nintendo can somehow differentiate, and it doesn't take much if
no.
the iPod's any indicator, you differentiate yourself to get more
yeah,
sales.
I mean they've sold iPod iterations based on that having functionality that the one previous should have already had.
Yeah.
Which they could very easily do with the Wii, because there is technology the Wii should have already had.
Yeah, so I suppose that's a fair point. I mean,
maybe they're copying Apple closer than we thought they were.
Well, yeah, they're pretty well intertwined these days. I mean, one thing you'd have to say is if you look at Wii Sports Resort and Wii Fit Plus, so we've now got these follow-ups in a sense to games that we've had. I mean, they've been very successful. So, you know, I don't know whether we've got, you could say there's a widespread case of, you know, if someone bought a Wii for Wii Sports, and you know, they basically bought it because, you know, they thought it was trendy, or they, you know, they thought it'd be fun, and they didn't like it, then you wouldn't think something like Wii Sports Resort would do as well as it has. So I think there's some traction there that, you know,
absolutely,
that people haven't just put it away and forgotten about it forever.
I brought
after
my
one
Wii
Christmas
to my holiday party at work, and people enjoyed, you know, playing it, and you know, some of them brought their kids over, and the kids, you know, had fun playing frisbee with Doggy, and you know, people think it's a cute, fun, maybe a little stupid, but you know, it's a fun thing to do, and so it has staying power. It is not a fad. I mean,
I think what is more interesting though would be, how would a game do if it didn't have the name Wii Sports as part of its name versus,
well, Carnival Games has done pretty damn well from what I understand.
That's true.
Yeah, it's the same kind of appeal without the branding, and obviously it's not a success on the order of those games, Wii Sports and Wii Sports Resort, but it's certainly relative to its production and everything, it's hugely successful. So that's an important point to keep in mind.
Yeah.
But what about something like Mario Kart Wii? Now, you know, did anyone buy a Wii for Mario Kart Wii? I'm kind of skeptical, but did a lot of people buy Mario Kart Wii? Yes, they did. So
yes, they. It was the wheel. I mean,
so there must be a lot of people, you know, presumably that did buy, you know, a Wii, perhaps for Wii Sports, perhaps for Wii Fit specifically. That, you know, just looking at the numbers statistically, is a good chance that they went and bought Mario Kart Wii, which is a lot more of a gamey, to use that kind of wretched term, game.
It's more of a game.
You know, much more of a traditional kind of gaming experience than before. Yeah, that suggests also that there is some sort of migration over from the pure social experience. Obviously, Mario Kart Wii can be quite a social thing with split-screen multiplayer as well.
Right.
But it's not the same sort of, you know, like you said, kind of cocktail party, Christmas party,
yeah,
kind of thing as Wii Sports. It is something different, I think.
Well, see, I would like to see what happens with New Super Mario
Bros. That's
exactly
Wii. What I was thinking.
Because I've brought that to social engagements, and I've talked about it on this show, where people who, you know, casually played games in the past or used to play games enjoyed themselves playing it, but I'm not sure they would go out and buy it themselves without me prodding them on it, if that makes sense.
It's selling very well right now, as I understand it. I don't know if it's selling as Christmas gifts to kids or if it's for adults. I don't know. I don't know how we would find that out, frankly.
Some of that stuff is definitely difficult to perceive from the outside, looking at numbers and things. I mean, we know that it's done incredibly well in Japan. You know, it outsold Mario Galaxy in 1 week.
That's so sad.
It is kind of sad in many ways.
In those terms, it wasn't
nearly as nuclear in North America, actually. But it still did extraordinarily well. But one thing I think that's quite interesting about New Super Mario Bros. Wii is we've talked about this before, but I think it's probably the most significant quote-unquote bridge game,
yep,
as they've talked about in the past before.
I think the main
reason is this. It is a social experience. We've heard all about that, but I think compared to Mario Kart Wii, and definitely compared to Wii Sports and Wii Sports Resort, it is a robust single-player experience. It is plausible that people buy it to play together, but find they enjoy playing it on their own. And once they find they enjoy playing that on their own, they might find they enjoy playing various other games on their own. You know, so it's an interesting thing that, you know, with Wii, they've made gaming more inclusive. That's such a big part of what they've done. But at some point, to sell more software, you've got to very slyly make it less inclusive again and actually get people to think of it in terms of a private experience just for them that they can enjoy. And I think New Super Mario Bros. Wii is much more credible to do that than Mario Kart Wii's one-player mode, frankly.
No. See, I think what we originally expected them to do, and I know I'm on the record for having said this, is they were going to create sports-based games based around the Wii Sports games themselves and sort of expand it. And we sort of saw that with, what was it, Super Mario Sluggers?
You had Sluggers, but it didn't work really the same way.
No, it didn't. And it didn't work economically the way you would have expected that to work either.
It did okay. It was definitely profitable.
That's not saying much. I mean, they didn't break the bank on that game.
Yeah, but profit's profit at the end of the day. But I mean, I know what you mean. That part of the bridge game component that you might have thought kind of just literally making games that were more full-featured experiences based on the little slices that you'd get in something like a Wii Sports, that really hasn't happened a whole lot. I mean, that's not the kind... New Super Mario Bros. Wii is a completely different kind of bridge game.
Yeah, exactly. It's not working from the in other any side, way related to anything that's
Tiger
in those
Woods
games.
Is maybe a good example of the embellishment on the golf game.
Yeah, but I mean, that's working with an established brand. I agree. I think it could serve the same purpose, and its success on Wii suggests that it may have done that. Although there is already a sizable fan base for Tiger Woods that may have simply sort of migrated onto Wii because they like the idea of using the Wii remote to do it.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. And I think what's interesting is that they haven't tried. Like, is it possible that the reason why they didn't achieve any sort of major crossover success is because of the branding? If they made a game called Wii Sports Baseball, which they promised is a more full-featured version of what you can already play, would it have sold better than Mario Baseball, even if it was appreciably the same game?
I don't know. I mean, because some people can say, well, I already have baseball on my Wii Sports. Why do I need baseball again?
Yeah, if they said you can actually play a real game of baseball.
Yeah, this is it. I would like to see it put to the test, just out of curiosity.
Yeah, that would be a very interesting experience to see what they would, and not just out of curiosity how it would be received, but how Nintendo would handle it.
The game itself would be intriguing.
The game and the marketing.
And now that you've got Motion Plus, I mean, you could definitely rationalize it on the grounds of we've made everything about it better. I mean, because it certainly would
benefit.
Yeah,
we can map your pitch.
Yeah.
You can map your swing. You can do all this stuff you couldn't do before, where before it was just like, hey, you have the remote kind of tilted up. Okay, we're going to put the bat that way.
I guess the most interesting thing to talk about, we talk about New Super Mario Bros. Wii coming out now and all that, is that, you know, it's been 3 years. I mean, there has not been that much bridging going along. It seems like Nintendo's actually been far more comfortable serving the two kinds of markets somewhat separately.
That's a fair statement.
And I think it may have been hard for them to determine how to make that bridge. It's not something that's painfully obvious. You could say, oh, well, you do this, this, and this, and you've created yourself a bridge game.
No, I think it's a problem that they've grappled with, and I think they've been plenty successful at sort of serving the markets discreetly, that they haven't necessarily diverted all their attention to it, at least not yet. But I think that there's plenty of the story left to be told on that one. We'll move now into sort of the real meat, the final part of the discussion, which is how well Nintendo has served us, the Nintendo fans, the long-time players of Nintendo games in this generation so far, compared with previous generations, really. And like I say, it's a pretty good comparison with GameCube because it did only last about 3 years. So I get the headline question for me is, has the quality of Nintendo's games aimed at, you know, the traditional players, to start with, let's say, being maintained through this generation compared to previous ones?
I'd say yes for the most part. I mean, Super Mario Galaxy was fantastic. I really loved Twilight Princess.
Some people
maybe didn't, but I loved it. And Metroid was absolutely stellar. The real problem was that these games came out and then there was this sort of hole in the schedule where people became bitter, rightfully so, because there was nothing there. I mean, there was Animal Crossing, Mario Kart, but those games
nothing
I felt were not as marquee titles or not as high quality as I would have expected. So maybe the second tier has taken kind of a hit in my mind, because Animal Crossing was very, very, very conservative. Mario Kart for Wii was very, very, very conservative. And so I could argue that the top tier games, marquee games, absolutely are fantastic. Their second tier traditional gamers maybe taken a back seat. Maybe they've outsourced a little more of that work. Maybe they have a little less of it. Where's Kirby? Where's Star Fox? You know, yeah. So Wario Land turned out great. I love that. It didn't really sell all that well, but I don't think the quality. I mean, Nintendo can still make really good games, and they still are making really good games. If anything, it's their the fact that they aren't spacing these games that are for us, so to speak. Well, they're not the schedule. There seems to be.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a very interesting sort of point because obviously, you know, we're no strangers to some of these gaps, these droughts in previous console generations. Obviously, James are very fond of recounting the N64 era, as yes. are we all, I'm sure. Yeah.
I'm not fond of it. I mean,
I mean, you want to do it, but yes. I mean, it's. So that's not, but I suppose the difference is that the N64 was an extremely difficult machine to develop for, and they were pioneering in the realms of 3D, whereas right. here we've got what's ostensibly cheap and quick and easy to develop for, and you know, this is something I've certainly said before, and I think many times, and it continues to be true, it seems, is that it still surprises me how they have struggled to fill the schedule, you know, resorting even to a raft of GameCube ports at one point earlier this year, when the whole thing was, well, you know, now we could just be about creating games rather than trying to wrap our head around how a system works and, you know, spend all this money making them. So definitely quality has not been my issue. It's quantity and spacing.
And I think part of it is we don't know what's on the cutting room floor. I think Nintendo is very careful about what they're releasing, at least from internally developed games, and I think there's a lot of upending of tea tables going on within.
Yeah, well, obviously we know about stuff like Project Hammer. We know about stuff like what happened with Disaster.
The
difficulties of Disaster, which was ultimately released very late. However, those were touted. They were put out there in a launch window where they probably wanted to show as much stuff as they could right. to kind of embellish the what they had, you know, to try and prop up the software lineup. Now, those kinds of incidents, if you like, where games kind of go down the toilet, they essentially are probably kept from us completely. So it may well be that we've seen many more Project Hammers, actually.
There will never be another Project Hammer.
But we don't actually, it's not in the public domain. Yeah. And I think perhaps one of the reasons for that may have been that even Nintendo themselves, and perhaps us as gamers in terms of expectations, have underestimated the difficulties of actually creating a good game based around the new controls. That mm-hmm. ultimately, it hasn't been such a walk in the park to develop for, because you've probably had a lot of developers going up blind alleys, getting to a point where they go, this just isn't working with these controls
right.
and having to call it a day.
Yep. And Nintendo has the funds to be able to do that compared to some other companies where, well, we know it isn't perfect, we know it isn't working out, but we need to, you know, get some of our money back, so we're going to release this anyway. Nintendo doesn't really need to do that.
And
if you extrapolate on their attitude towards things like online play for, like, you know, New Super Mario Bros. Wii, I agree it shouldn't have been in there, it wouldn't have been good. You know, Miyamoto says, like, well, he didn't say this. He should have said, we don't want to put online in there because we don't think it'll work well, given our infrastructure. And so if you extrapolate that attitude towards entire games, you see, well, if we've been working on this a year, but we just don't think that it'll make, you know, a good impression on people, it'll cheapen our image, we're just going to ditch this project and go work on something else. I fully believe they've done that.
I think that's true. They definitely would exercise that kind of quality control internally, and one could argue that Nintendo of America exercised that quality control with Disaster Day of Crisis, where Nintendo of Europe and Japan did not, which is an interesting example in itself. The regional subsidiary would actually take that responsibility on itself.
Yeah, well, that's somewhat uncharacteristic for a company that, generally speaking, hasn't allowed many of their territories to execute much regional control.
No, that's been a big difference over the past 3 years that I have been quite surprised by, is that you have seen, you know, Europe has been more enterprising. It did think, for instance, Nintendo of Europe picked up Zack and Wiki because Capcom weren't going to publish it in Europe, basically.
And you saw this some in the past with Nintendo of America, where they were allowed to do a little bit more of their own decision-making, but you've never seen it with Nintendo of Europe, and God forbid Australia try to do anything. They might just be invaded. I mean,
there have been great leaps forward, I think, and obviously as Wii has become a more successful enterprise in Europe. It's sort of become a virtuous circle to some extent, you know, and you see that with things like Leighton, where Leighton was very successful in Europe and then was essentially kind of remarketed in America on that basis and then did even better there. So there's some interesting dynamics between the regions going on.
And not to get off too off topic here, but that might be sort of an expression of the management that's come into play, since it's a long-term process, including things like basically starting with Iwata coming in, and maybe that's more his management style than the Iron Fist control.
Yeah,
but it does show the benefits of federalism, where you can say, all right, you make a decision, and then we'll evaluate it as a company and see if we can apply it to all of our regions instead of just what
see what works. To some extent, having a sort of a breeding ground for different approaches you can kind of apply it elsewhere. But I mean, go back to some of these issues about, you know, the how well we've been satisfied by the games themselves on Wii that are the more traditional experiences. One thing I've been really surprisingly pleased with is just the games that are aimed at that gamers, you know, sort of what your traditional gamers, but your old school games, you know, going back to the 8-bit and the 16-bit eras of gameplay, have been very well served. Obviously, there's the Virtual Console, which, you know, for me has been, I would say, has been a huge part of just re-engaging me with gaming in general. I mean, I continue to like those kinds of experiences, and the Virtual Console is a great, you know, even with its issues, and obviously we dedicated a whole feature to this some episodes ago, so we're not going to rehash that too much, but, you know, it is a great fountain of those kinds of experiences. But look at new games. You've got WiiWare, yes, you know, and you've got things like Mega Man 9 and the Rebirth games and all that. But, you know, Wario Land, New Super Mario Brothers, Wii, Punch-Out, A Boy in His Blob. I mean, just this year plus.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it's this fountain of traditional school experience, which, if we go back to 2006, that is not in my thinking whatsoever.
No. Definitely.
I would never have imagined, you know, when we're talking about getting even farther away, you know, it seemed to me, with all this motion control stuff, the idea that we'd have this rebirth of Punch-Out, and it's so similar to the old game, but it's wonderful and it's new at the same time, that I would not have envisioned that whatsoever.
Well, I think it's because there are three overlapping markets, or maybe three markets, two of them of which overlap. I mean, across the board, you're seeing a desire for retro gaming. I mean, you see games like this on PlayStation Network and Xbox Live Arcade as well that are new but old school, and that sort of that market is overlaps with the modern traditional gaming market, but there are certainly people that care more about traditional gaming and people, lapsed gamers or whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, sure.
And so it's almost like there are three markets there, and the Wii certainly caters to all three of them.
No, it's true. I mean, I'm just really pleasantly surprised by how well that sort of blossomed, and I not all of them have necessarily sold absolutely well, but it's still. You know, even though they might not have been the biggest commercial successes in every case, it seems to me that it just wouldn't, you know, especially a retail level, something like Punch-Out, you're not really seeing that. You wouldn't see that kind of game. Obviously, you wouldn't see Punch-Out on another system, but, you know, you're not seeing that kind of game, or, you know, this 2D kind of resurgence with stuff like Muramasa.
Blatant,
you know,
nostalgia.
That's not going to happen.
It's definitely reassuring to see that these games are still viable, because, you know, for a very long time it was always, oh, well, 3D is the way of the future, and why are you playing that stupid little 2D puzzle game over there, you know?
Yeah, there's a maturation going on where they're coming to coexist, and that the Wii, with all its talk of, you know, disruption and all that, is actually part of that process, which is kind of interesting and comforting at the same time, I think. So I mean, that would be one of my biggest the biggest sort of plus points about the kind of software that I've been able to play on Wii over the past 3 years. But I guess where I would probably be the most disappointed is in what I would call sort of games that are focused on long-time gamers, but that are progressive in their ideas. You know, so some of the kind of things that you would get on the HD consoles, but not necessarily, you know, FPSs with RPG elements or whatever, not just that kind of stuff. You know, but things that are building on the games that we had on the GameCube, but you're ejecting them with original ideas and things like that. We haven't seen too much of that from Nintendo or anyone else, really. Yeah. I mean, the stuff like Boom Blocks and all that is probably more notable than, you know, the, like I said, I've said before, you know, the Nintendo sort of new Pikmin. Where is that? You know, I mean, they haven't been the best at it.
And the best we have out of that, the closest example we have besides the new play Pikmin, is a game that doesn't even use the pointer, and that's
Little King Story.
Yeah, and it doesn't even use the damn thing.
Yeah, which is interesting. Yeah, it's sort of certainly progressive in some ways, the way it incorporates RPG elements into the Pikmin kind of action RTS structure. But at the same time, it's kind of backward. It's kind of retrograde.
It foregoes the most obvious advance you could make.
Very curious, indeed, yes. And I mean that, but that is the kind of game, yes, that I would think, you know, because it is, you know, in many ways, you know, the kind of game that would appeal to long-time gamers. But it's original, you know.
Right.
It's not just sort of rehashing the same old things, and I mean, I think that's probably where Wii has been weakest, frankly, and that's why I think, you know, there, for those that have played Little King's Story, you hear quite a lot about it, because it's you know, it's a really fine example on the
right
system, despite some of its flaws.
I'm trying to think of a game that is obviously building on games we already play, but
I'd say Super Mario Galaxy is as close as I can think of from a first party perspective in terms of more of a polished experience that builds upon kind of in the same way Little King's Story. I mean, they really streamlined the camera system and
yes,
they introduced some interesting new gravity mechanics and things like that really, you know, are true increments on what we've seen before are compelling.
I think that's a good example, definitely. And some of the ones that we talked about earlier, like, you know, what the controls could bring to Metroid Prime 3, for instance,
right,
or something like that, is definitely true. And, I mean, I think probably one of the biggest things in this area that's yet to come is the next Zelda, you know, which is supposed to actually be a progressive Zelda, because we haven't really had one on consoles for quite a while.
A game that you, like, you haven't played before.
So I think that is going to be a huge, huge sort of test of Nintendo's sort of abilities in those areas. I mean, I suppose it doesn't do that much good to kind of go over the third-party stuff again. It's something that gets discussed quite regularly in emails and all that sort of thing. But, I mean, just going back to 2006, it's interesting sort of change of that we've had, because one might have thought that third-party support on Wii would be weak in 2006 because you don't know how well it's going to sell.
And it was.
But the funny thing is that Wii has now become this juggernaut commercially that the GameCube was never anything close to, and yet we still have the third party problem. It's a case of expectations being met, but for different reasons than we probably thought it was going to be.
Right. It's funny because in 2006 we had publishers who had decided they were going to really support the Wii.
Ubisoft.
Ubisoft being the worst example. But they
best/worst.
They really supported it.
The quintessential example.
No, worst is the correct word. They really supported it by basically just saying, "All right, we're going to do the minimum effort in order to get as much content on here as possible." And the net result was, surprise, surprise, it didn't sell. And I think that turned off a lot of developers.
Well, yeah, to be fair, they had some success. I mean, you know, Red Steel and the Rabbids games, you know, at launch they did quite well. But of course, at launch, you know, consumers get funneled down a finite number of roads.
You remember, they also had like 7 or 8 games in the launch window.
They did, yeah. And some of them were certainly, but I think that was a sort of you know, a spread strategy, if you like.
And most of them were ports of games that weren't that good to begin with, which was the funny part, because they ported over, was it Blazing Angels? Which I never heard anybody say, man, you've got to play Blazing Angels.
Perhaps so. But as time has gone on, there's been some notable failures of third-party games on Wii and all this sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in many ways, I think some people think it's actually sort of more dire than it was on GameCube in a weird way.
Well, it's more depressing because even though they're the market leader, they still don't have good third-party support. So it's like, well, it'll never be happen now. It's kind of the...
Yes, I think that is it.
What's the old is the new, or whatever you want to say. I mean, Nintendo has always and will always have this problem with third parties because, let's face it, they are the juggernaut of their system. And you know, ever since the Super Nintendo era, whatever, after that, it'll just never be the same. I mean...
I suppose that is what we've learned. And also, you know, that gaming has become so big that even if Nintendo is the clear market leader, third parties could still have this whole other playground to operate in, which is still a big pie to get money out of on the other systems. Yeah, just because now the market leader is not so all powerful as it was once before, because the industry is just so much bigger in an absolute sense. So that's definitely a part of it. But I mean, as a result of some of these issues about what Nintendo's done, the third party situation, what genres have you felt the absence of?
RPGs.
Yes.
So even relative to the GameCube?
I think the entire generation is lacking in quality RPGs at this point.
There hasn't been a marquee one yet.
Well, it's very odd that we've waited this long for Final Fantasy 13.
I mean, that's not
unusual for Square to take so long to move in the market for this generation.
Well, part of that's because they were inextricably tied to Sony, and I think
because they must have ballsed it up, frankly.
They were kind of jarred by what happened, I think. I think they kind of sat back and went,
maybe, but and of course they've ended up now with a 360 version on the way. But I mean, on the Wii side, I mean, RPGs, I'm not an RPG gamer really, so I've been insulated from it in terms of my experiences. But I suppose the other one would be first person shooters.
Yeah, that's just stupid.
Which is strange. Yeah.
Yeah, because of course one of the first demos for the Wii was Metroid Prime 2 working with the new controls, and of course we had Metroid Prime 3 and all this. It seems like you would have been able to create some really interesting first-person experiences on Wii, and yet it hasn't happened at all, despite the fact that the genre in general is every bit as powerful as it's ever been.
Yeah.
Well, and not just that, it's on a system that when we first saw its control said, oh, this is going to be awesome for first-person.
Yeah, it's kind of getting closer to mouse and keyboard, which has always been held on a pedestal as a way of playing.
It's unfortunate that the target demographic for the mass market first-person shooter, the target demographic really cares about graphics as well. And therefore, I think a lot of publishers make the decision to focus on what they can market in terms of visuals over a control scheme.
Right. Well, it's hard to show a control scheme in a commercial.
Yeah.
I mean, let's be honest.
It's unfortunate. And first-person shooter genre is one area where you can definitely make this argument that if Nintendo had actually gone and done for the horsepower, they would have just sort of eaten up that market. It would have been gangbusters, in my opinion.
If they could have married your top-flight graphical performance to the Wii interface, yes. I mean,
would they have made more of a profit if they'd done that? Maybe not, and that's probably why they didn't do it.
I think you're right, but they might have captured some of that FPS market, whatever that does for you. But I do think also there's been some missed opportunities with FPS, just first person in general, in terms of trying to create different kinds of first-person experiences that are leveraged on the fact that you've got a more fluid interface.
Yeah.
You know, that you're not... Let's make a game that really you couldn't make on the PS3 or the 360 because it would just be unreasonable to ask people to be that good at steering two analog sticks. But with what we've got, it's fine. I'm not an FPS guy at all. And, that's my taste. And, I'm nothing against the quality of the games that are out there. But some of the reason is I find they are slow. They are just, on consoles, they are just slow, not immediate experiences. I sort of struggle to get into them. But I think, on Wii, you could actually create something that is more sort of instantly gratifying, that's faster paced and all that. But when people make first-person shooters on Wii, it's something like The Conduit, which is just Me Too to every first-person shooter that's ever been made on any console. And I just think that's the fundamentally wrong approach. You need to do something that's going to give people a reason to say, this could only be done on Wii. Not, oh, look how close we got to actually good graphics.
Well, I think there's certainly a hole for something that's like a really exploratory first-person, almost PC adventure-style exploratory game, where you're actually walking around and exploring things as a first-person perspective and opening up drawers and stuff. I think that could be really cool, or you could even do something like that with like a Phoenix Wright series, although that's a really budget series. I don't think I'd do that. But you know, that kind of gameplay, marry it with something like Carmen Sandiego or whatever, where I think there could be some really, really cool things there, and I don't think that really has been tapped.
No, I think the first-person perspective in general, leaving aside the issue of sort of shooters or an action game in first-person, you know, there's been, you know, Metroid Prime's obviously, you know, something that's there. You've got the horror games, I guess.
Yeah, that's closer.
Mm-hmm. I haven't played any of them, but I mean, they're not generally being that well received, some of the first-person horror games, you know, the flashlight games, if you like. Like, you know, Fatal Frame had its control issues in Japan and has not been greenlit for anywhere else.
No.
And then the Grudge game is getting roundly ridiculed for being poor. I think it's remained sort of unmined territory for sure. I mean, what any others you think that have really been, any other genres that have been underutilized?
I think the flight genre.
Yeah, absolutely, flight genre. I really thought we would see an airplane game where you fly around holding your Wii like an airplane, and or some sort of pilot wings type thing.
Well, I mean, I guess that brings me on to one of the last things we'll look at for this is that, what do you think about the choices that Nintendo's made about which, you know, of its franchises that it's kept going and which ones it hasn't? I mean, we've had some weird callbacks like Punch-Out out of nowhere, Sin and Bloody Punishment is kind of bizarre to come back. But on the other hand, Star Fox is still not back. Pilot Wings is inexplicably absent. I mean, your general kind of thoughts on that? And the fact that actually Metroid is continuing to be supported, which I thought was quite surprising.
Well, you know, part of it might be when I think about the games that we just mentioned, Pilot Wings and what was it, Star Fox. Maybe that Nintendo just doesn't know what team to give this task to, because Pilot Wings was made by what, Paradigm?
Paradigm, yeah, 64, yeah.
And Star Fox, I mean, they made it internally. They don't seem that interested in doing it again, and they've had failures outsourcing it for the most part. So I could see them just saying, like, well, I don't know what to do with this. We're just going to sit on it for now.
So you think it might not be so much of a deliberate thing as just, you know, the opportunity as it presented itself, whereas, you know, for whatever reason, you know, it came up with Next Level for Punch-Out, for instance, and it was just, you know, something that happened kind of organically, will bring back Punch-Out, you know,
I think that's absolutely the case, and I think that's why we don't have a Kirby game on our Wii either, is that Hal sort of is fizzled out for the most part. I don't know what they're working on now.
I mean, we all talk about how Japan-centric Nintendo is, and Kirby games continue to perform extraordinarily well in Japan, so it's quite remarkable that we don't have a console Kirby game, although obviously they've always been very associated with handhelds.
Yeah, so once it's a game that Nintendo isn't really interested in doing as a EAD or Intelligent Systems, I think it becomes much more challenging, and I think they've been burned a couple of times on their partnerships with third parties, either internally how they feel, like, even though we love F-Zero GX or whatever, and Miyamoto said something like he didn't like it, and then you have games like Wario Master of Disguise that just are abominations, and even Wario World that was with
Kirby
Treasure
Squeak
wasn't
Squad
terribly good. So,
no,
you know, I think they're maybe starting to just sort of think harder about who they partner with for some of these games, and I'd love for them to do it internally, but apparently they just don't want to do another Star Fox.
They haven't got the bandwidth, apparently,
or the interest. Maybe they, you know, like, well, we're not interested in it, and if we're not interested in it, we're not going to make it a good game, so why bother? I mean, that could be as simple as that.
Yeah, well, it's true. You shouldn't force it. Well, I guess we'll come to the close then. This is a pretty broad-ranging topic. I mean, these in many ways are the things that we talk about on a week-to-week basis, but I thought it'd be interesting to bring them all together for this end-of-the-year show. And indeed, we did have an email not so long ago from Wyatt in New Hampshire, who asked us sort of about how we felt about the Wii software lineup to date. And obviously, this is very much a core part of what we've been discussing here. So thanks to Wyatt for sending that in. It certainly spurred on.
This was your surprise mailbag.
Yeah, it's a surprise extended mailbag.
You didn't
mailbag.
See that coming. Stealth mailbag.
Yes, yeah, you've been listener mail all along. Eh? You feel like you've had the rug pulled out from under you now. But yeah, before we wrap up, I guess just to sum up our sort of feelings on it, general kind of overall satisfaction with the generation to date. James, would you characterize how you feel about Wii compared with what you thought it was going to be?
More satisfied than with the GameCube and less satisfied than the N64. Excluding the last 2 years of the N64's lifetime. Which is a big exclusion, but excluding those last 2 years.
You know what? The last 2 years of the N64's life is underrated. Majora's Mask,
yeah.
Sin and Punishment in Japan.
Yeah. Well, no.
Mario, Perfect Dark.
It would be
fine
if that was the last 6 months of the N64.
It's true, actually. It was the very, very end where it got good again.
I mean, if they mashed all the games from those 2 years into, say, a year or 8 months, that'd have been a solid software lineup. But spread over 24 months.
It's true. But I think it went out on something of a high note with some of those games.
And it's amazing to think that some of those games made the jump over to the GameCube. And
that's right, yeah, of course, because of Eternal Darkness and Dinosaur Planet. Yeah, and a few others.
The eternal classic Dinosaur Planet.
It will be very interesting to see because again, also, I think the Super NES had plenty of really, really excellent late titles.
Oh, yeah.
Well after the 3 years, whereas, of course, the GameCube Jungle Beat. I mean, I'm struggling beyond that, really.
Jungle Beat's a solid title.
But you're right. I mean, if Wii and whatever the next Nintendo console game are not redundant, and I don't think they will be based on what Nintendo says, they seem to want to do some different interface. I think there is a good likelihood that there will be some late support for it, like you saw with the SNES.
Yeah.
If there's such a big difference in control schemes, like there was between the SNES and N64. It makes sense. I mean,
I also think that we've had the situation with Motion Plus. We've had the situation with this period where they seem to be struggling for games because they've had the ports from GameCube and all this sort of stuff. And I rather suspect that is past us now. And in fact, things will improve somewhat as we go on. And certainly Zelda, Metroid, Other M, Galaxy 2, and Pikmin. Could well form the backbone of a nice sort of 18 months to 2 years that are ahead of us. So I'm kind of optimistic about the future in that regard. But in terms of the 3 years so far, for me, I would say, actually, I've been very pleased with it in many ways. I've kind of reconnected with gaming to a greater extent than certainly those last couple of years of the GameCube. We kind of went into a bit of a dormant kind of period as a gamer, I think. Although the DS has a big role to play as well, certainly, in that. But, because of that sort of unexpected resurgence in sort of very classic gaming experiences and gameplay. But I've appreciated the new stuff too, and especially with Motion Plus, which, has been kind of a disappointment so far with how weakly it's been supported. Yeah. I still think that the best may yet be to come.
I guess I tend to agree. I've honestly been a little underwhelmed by Wii.
Oh, don't. I mean, there's as we've talked about, there are many aspects that have been underwhelming. But
yeah.
If I had to encapsulate it all, I'd say I was fairly... I can't deny the enjoyment I've had over the past 3 years. It has been a lot of fun, actually.
Natural conclusion.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's going to wrap it up for this show, and that is going to wrap it up for RFN in the space year 2009, even though we will still be recording an episode in said year next week.
Oh, that's right, we will, won't we?
Yeah, we will.
we'll see you in a new decade. Or at least I won't be there, but you'll see Greg and James and Johnny and John in a new decade, or hear them in a new decade.
New decade, same immaturity.
Hopefully we will indeed be back, yes, and we're entering our third year. At the helm of RFN, it's felt like an awfully long year for me personally. it's a good time to mention that I will have edited every week but two, one of which was E3 and one of which was the opening of the NFL season, which is obviously my Christmas. it's been a lot of work, but you know, it's also been very rewarding. So I always want to thank the listeners who send in their thoughts and appreciation for the show, because it does make it somewhat more tolerable to stare at those waveforms for about 10 hours every week.
As the editor of my own podcast, I have great respect for what Greg puts himself through every week, because he, you know, four people, here's three, but usually he has four people to deal with, sometimes five, and it's much longer than radio trivia, so he's the unsung / sung hero.
We do get lots of, you know, appreciation for all sorts of, you know, for the show being regular and all that, and that is probably what I appreciate the most. So on that topic, we will in the next decade still be needing your listener mail, so make sure you get that into rfn@nintendoworldreport.com. You too could possibly have an extended feature come out of your listener mail one day. Probably not,
but I doubt it.
Probably a 10-minute segment in which five of it is devoted to Rocky IV.
We haven't had a good Christmas robot toy. I need to figure out exactly how much of the audio we can use and it still be fair use, because I'm pretty sure if we split it out, like we do like a, this is your 10-second Rocky IV clip over the next year, we could get most of the movie in by the end of RFN for 2010.
It is a classic. And also, don't forget to rate and review on iTunes. That's another great way for people to find the show. And with that, that's all there is left for RFN in this decade. So I'll see you in the next one. Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye. I was just commenting that they hopefully learned their lesson, because I threw out Kirby Squeak Squad because,
yes,
in my mind, it and Master of Disguise are two titles that are inextricably linked despite having different developers.
Absolutely. I absolutely agree with you.
Like, those two games should have come bundled in a package together called Do Not Buy. These games are not good.
I tell you what, plenty of people bought Squeak Squad in Japan. That's kind of what I know.
People didn't buy it in America because he looked so unhappy.
Damn you, boys. Shake his
fist. That game was half finished. It was chucked out the door because the developer was going under.
Yeah.
It's as simple as that.